Another technique that helps us to face with the problems that can affect the control of a process is the so-called feed-forward technique. In this case, the enemy is represented by the possible disturbances that can arise and that can affect the process itself. Let's always make reference to the heat exchanger, the situation that we have chosen since the beginning to describe our algorithms. And we can say that the temperature that exits, with which the fluid exits from the chamber, is due to the quantity of the vapor that enters into the chamber itself, that will provide a suitable amount of thermal energy to the flux, to the fluid itself, therefore making it warmer or not, depending on this amount of flux of vapor. But there are two terms that have not been considered in the previous model that can modify slightly the equilibrium that we have found with the control. The first is the temperature with which both the vapor and the fluid will enter into the chamber. Clearly, if the vapor is more hot, the temperature that we want the fluid has will be reached very quickly, and it is not necessary to provide to the fluid the same amount of vapor, but probably it could be reduced, and the same temperature in output will be reached. The same consideration can be done for the temperature of the fluid itself, since if the fluid is more hot, we don't need so much vapor. Otherwise, if the fluid is cold, we will need a huge amount of vapor to bring it at the desired temperature. If, in other words, these two quantities for a certain motivation should change, the overall control should change as well. But in the previous model, this situation has not been taken into account. The variation of the temperature of the vapor or of the fluid represents a disturbance that can affect the process and therefore our control. There is another consideration that can be done, and this is related to the velocity with which the fluid enters into the chamber, and in particular with which it crosses the serpentine. Of course, if the movement of the fluid is fast, it has less time for receiving the energy from the vapor, in other words, for being warmed, and therefore it will exit with a lower temperature. That is, we need to provide more vapor. Conversely, if the fluid crosses the serpentine slowly, we have more time for receiving the amount of thermal energy, and probably less vapor will be necessary for obtaining the same goal. In other words, the velocity, that is the flow rate of the vapor, can be a suitable disturbance that changes the conditions under which the control is exerted. Here is another magnitude that has not been considered in the previous model. Of course, we can imagine several different situations, terms, parameters that can affect the control of the process. Therefore, we could need suitable instruments, suitable tools, just to consider also these contributions and perhaps to eliminate their effect on the overall control chain. The suitable technique that is applied in this case is called feedforward, but it works in a different way depending on the fact that the disturbance is additive or multiplicative or even both. Because, as we will see, in one case the feedforward basically cancel the presence of the disturbance, in another case its effect is reduced, is let's say limited, and we have to make the suitable hypothesis to apply it to the process. In the slide number 18, the feed-forward chain is shown, and this help makes us to understand better the role of such a kind of tool that we have. The new control that we include in the previous one is represented by the part in the figure that is yellow and features the presence of a new transducer that measures the particular variable that we are considering as disturbing the process, together with a block that implements a new controlling function, providing a compensating term that eliminates the presence of the disturbance, hopefully, from the controlling chain. The first magnitude that is considered is the temperature variation in the fluid that enters into the room, and clearly we can say that such a kind of effect called T1 is additive. In other words, the temperature in output of the fluid will be characterized, let's say, by an amount of degrees that will be greater if the input temperature is higher, or will be lower if the input temperature of the fluid itself is less. Of course, this is true if we maintain the same amount of thermal energy provided to the fluid through the opening or closing of the valve that regulates the flux of the vapor. Let's try to express these considerations into a formula. In slide 19, the upper expression, in a very easy way, clarifies such a concept, because it says that the process variable, in our case, the output temperature of the fluid is proportional to the input temperature it has, plus a certain quantity, a certain amount that is provided by VA, where VA, looking at the figure in slide 18, is the so-called manipulated variable, that is the output of the actuator. We are talking, just to be concrete, of the flux of the vapor that will bring a certain amount of thermal energy and will contribute to increase or not the temperature of the fluid that is crossing the serpentine. Of course, the two effects are weighted by suitable constants, also to, let's say, regulate the dimensional terms in this equation. The alpha is the weight of the temperature T1, beta is the weight relative to the manipulated variable. Looking at this manipulated variable VA and looking at the picture in slide 18, we can say that this variable is given by the product of the transfer function of the actuator, that in our case is represented by the motor and the valve, that multiplies the inputs to the actuator. And in this case, we have already included the compensation function, the feedforward block. Therefore, we have V, that is the control variable as it exits from the controller, plus FF, that is the compensation function, the compensation block transfer function. FF stands for feed forward, that multiplies the disturbance. In our case, the temperature T1 with which the fluid enters into the chamber. Okay. If we replace this quantity into the first formula, we obtain that the process variable is equal to beta multiplying FA, the transfer function of the actuator, time the control variable, plus a term that is included into the squared brackets and consists of alpha, that is the constant of the temperature T1, plus FF, feed forward, that multiplies beta time the actuator transfer function. All these terms are multiplied by the temperature T1. This is very simple to be achieved because it's a matter of mathematical steps. But what it is important for us is that the ideal situation is PV equal to beta FA V. That is, what we want to have is that the process variable is influenced only by the control variable exiting from the main controller and the transfer function of the actuator. We don't want to have any effect of the input temperature. So, to obtain this goal, we need to set the terms in the square brackets, so as the overall value of this term is zero. But this is possible only if alpha divided by beta FA is equal to minus FF. This is the only condition that makes the term in the squared brackets equal to zero. Clearly, this is very easy to be reached because alpha is the weight of the temperature with which the fluid enters into the chamber, and clearly we suppose to know it. Beta is the transformation of the output of the actuator into the physical magnitude that will affect the process. In other words, what is the output of the actuator in our case? It's a flux. It's the flow rate of the vapor that will enter into the chamber for the heat exchanging. So we need to know the relationship between the position of the window in the valve and the flow rate of the vapor itself, and the relationship between the vapor itself and the temperature that will be obtained by the fluid that is crossing the serpentine. This is a difficult, of course, task, but it is necessary to be done, because if we want to control the process, we need to know the equations that characterize it. So, from the control point of view, alpha and beta must be known, and this clearly allow us to completely identify the feed-forward function, since also the transfer function of the actuator is known. Consider that we have described it in the previous example in the cascade description, when we said that the transfer function is made by a pole into the origin time, let's say, low-pass frequency. Low-pass filter transfer function. Therefore, from the control point of view, we have the possibility for complete describing, for achieving a complete description of the feed-forward function, and this allowed to us to eliminate the term in the square brackets, so finally, making the process variable the output temperature of the fluid only dependent on the actuator and on the output of the controller. Just to be, let's say, practice when we will deal with the exercises, with the real problems, what it is important is always to arrive to an equation that is equal to the first one we have written. If you look in the upper part of the slide 19, you see that we have PV, the process variable, equal to alpha T1 plus beta VA. Okay, we need to have an equation like this, but we need to have an equation like this in general, because we need to know what is the relation between control and the physical evolution of the process. So we need to know what is alpha, because we start from the hypothesis that we are able to characterize the effect of the disturbance onto the process. And we need to know what is beta, because, as I have already said, we need to know the relationship between VA, that is the manipulated variable, for us the position of the valve, and then the flow rate of the fluid, and from the flow rate of the fluid up to the PV, that is the temperature, final temperature of the fluid when exiting from the chamber. So starting from this kind of knowledge that is supposed to be, we have, alpha and beta are known. FA is the transfer function of the actuator that we have chosen, so we have to know it, and therefore FF is completely identified. Is FF constant? To answer to this question, it is necessary to be sure that T1 doesn't feature any phase delay or component with respect to the main controller. This is true in the majority of the cases, so let's say we can claim that FF is constant. Of course, this consideration is specific for the case we are considering. Generally speaking, the feed-forward function can depend on the frequency and anticipates or delays with respect to the action of the controller, depending if the two paths are in phase or not. I mean, if with respect to the action of the controller, the variables that are affected by FF are in phase or not, that can be, if we should represent with an equivalent electronic circuit, they can be modeled with an inductor or with a capacitor. In any case, we could be in the situation of expressing the feed-forward function as 1 plus S tau 1, for example, divided by 1 plus S tau 2, just to say that the two time constants are different. According to the fact that tau 1 is greater than tau 2 or not, we will say that the phase shift is in advance or in delay. In this case, the feed forward will be called dynamic. Conversely, if the feed forward function is constant, it will be defined as static. A completely different situation must be considered if we make the hypothesis of a disturbance that is multiplicative and not addictive, as in the previous case. To see this, we can describe the system in terms of thermal power. The equation that depicts this power balance is proposed in slide number 20, and basically it consists of balance of what enters in the system and what exits in terms, of course, of thermal power. WE represents the thermal power that is provided to the process, in particular to the chamber into which the heat exchanging happens, by the vapor that enters through the valve into the room. F time T1 time Ct represents instead the thermal power that enters into the chamber by means of the fluid that must receive the heat, or perhaps must diminish its temperature. And this thermal power is given by the product of the flow rate F time the temperature T1 time the thermal capacity that represents the capability of a certain material or a whatever material to provide a certain thermal effect depending on its capability, its characteristics that are related to a density, taking into consideration the volume, the amount of the substance that we are considering, and the degrees in Kelvin or in Celsius that it can develop if it receives a certain amount of heat at a certain temperature, by unit of temperatures, we could say. Of course, a certain quantity enters in terms of thermal power, a certain quantity exit. And in the second member of the equation, the term F times T times Ct is considered. That is basically the amount of power that we have in output as the same has been considered in the other member in input, with the only difference that the temperature T is now the temperature with which the fluid exits from the chamber, while T1 was the temperature with which the fluid entered into it. This allows us to express the output temperature T like as T1 plus WE divided by CT times F. This is a very, let's say, reasonable expression that basically says that we exit with a temperature that is what we entered with plus what we received inside the chamber. Very easy. Now the problem is, we made the hypothesis that the disturbance in this case is due to a variation in the flow rate of the fluid. That is, the fluid may cross the serpentine with a greater or lower velocity, and this clearly will affect its own capability of receiving the heat from the vapor, because clearly if the velocity is high, we have not enough time to receive enough heat, enough thermal power from the fluid, from the vapor itself. Therefore, until now we have supposed that the flow rate is constant. Instead, in this case, we suppose it is variable. And this is clearly a disturbance that can affect the control of the system. Unfortunately, this is a very perfect example of a multiplicative disturbance. That is, the magnitude, the physical magnitude that can change is not added to a, let's say, term that provides a contribution in temperature. No. In this case, as you can see, it is multiplied by the capacity, and then the result of this multiplication is the divisor of the ratio WE divided by CTF. In other words, we cannot apply the same procedure that we have implemented before when we considered a variation in to the input temperature T1, because in that case we simply manage so as to subtract the potential variation in the temperature T1. We organize a solution so as to eliminate any effect of T1 onto the temperature in output. But in this case, if we eliminate the term in this expression that contains the flow rate, that contains F, we will also eliminate WE, that is the thermal power due to the vapor. In other words, if we eliminate F, we will eliminate also the manipulated variable, the only manner that we have to influence the evolution of the process. Therefore, we simply lose the capability of regulating, of tuning the process, and the output temperature T will be only equal to the input temperature T1. So the problem will be solved by the fact that the things don't change. Of course, this is not the right way, the right choice. But in these conditions, we have no more alternatives. And the unique possibility that we can consider is that the variation of the flow rate of F is small. In this case, we can express the same formula with an approximated version, as it is shown in the lower part of the slide 20. T, the output temperature, is written as WE divided by CT, that multiplies the nominal flow rate, that is the flow rate that typically we suppose the vapor has without any variations, that multiplies the quantity, the expression in the squared brackets, 1 minus F minus F nominal divided by F, plus the input temperature T1. This expression is basically equivalent to the previous one, but can be approximated with another expression that says that the output temperature is equal to WE divided by CT times the nominal flow rate plus T1. This expression, however, says basically that the variation of the flow rate is so small that can be neglected. And okay, this is a solution to such a kind of problem, but it is a solution very poor, because we are considering a problem, and the solution that we propose is, okay, that problem exists, but we suppose that its effect is so small that we can neglect it. In other words, the only solution that we have to implement in case of multiplicative disturbance is to implement nothing, that is, to consider the disturbance so negligible that no further action is necessary to be taken, and the control can continue in the same way as we have applied to the process till the moment into which the disturbance has been considered. The model that we have previously considered is, let's say, a little bit approximated. In other words, it describes the behavior of the process when the transient has expired. The transfer function, however, must consider also those components that imply a different answer of the process when the input solicitations feature a certain frequency. That is, in the previous model, we have supposed that all the thermal power that is provided to the heat exchanging chamber will exit. And clearly, this is not completely true. The exchanger will store a certain amount of power, and this means that the temperature variation is caused by amount of thermal power that is given by the difference between what we provide to the chamber, to the process, minus what remains in the chamber itself. In other words, the equation that we have used before can be corrected and made more precise by writing WE plus F times T1 CT, the same expression as before, equal to F T2 times CT plus WN. That is a little bit different than before, because we added this term WN that represents the amount of thermal power that is in the chamber. Roughly speaking, we could say that represents the amount of vapor that is in the room. While FT2CT represents the amount of power that exits together with the vapor that comes out from the chamber, and the other two quantities represent the amount of thermal power that enter into the exchanger. We could say with an approximation that is not particularly big that the temperature inside the exchanger TP is equal to the output temperature T2. And this magnitude is defined by the law of the thermodynamics as equal to the ratio between the heat Q divided by the mass M of the fluid that enters into the exchanger multiplied by the thermal capacity. In turn, the heat is the integral function, of course, of the thermal power Wm that we have defined in the time. So we can express the situation with the equation T2 equal to the integral of Wn dt divided by mct. And using the first formula that is shown in slide 21, we can replace this quantity, Wn, with We plus the product of the flow rate times the capacity times the difference between the input and output temperatures divided by S mct, and doing this step, we have also transformed the equation from the time domain to the Laplace, that is frequency domain. Developing the equation, we have that SMCT T2 equal to WE plus the flow rate CT time T1 minus T2. And from this equation, we finally obtain that the output temperature T2 is equal to WE plus the flow rate times CT times T1 divided by SMCT plus flow rate CT. And finally, T2 equal to T1 plus WE divided by FCT, all divided by 1 plus SM divided by F. That is a very similar equation to what we obtained before, with the only difference that we have introduced a low-pass let's say, expression, a loop-pass behavior in the frequency response of the system. This loop-pass expression expires when S tends to zero, that is, when the transient has finished. Generally speaking, we can once more claim that the output temperature is given by the input temperature plus the contribution given by the thermal power provided by the vapor, let's say affected, weighted by the flow rate and the thermal capacity of the fluid that receives this thermal power. Concerning instead the low pass expression that we have added, considering the amount of the thermal power that is inside the exchanger, this formula, this expression, features the presence of a suitable time constant that represents the velocity with which the system can answer to an input solicitation, that is, to a mass of a fluid that is entering into the exchanger with a certain flow rate F. This time constant shows that the greater the flow rate the fluid, the faster will be the answer of the system, that is completely reasonable, and that the greater is the mass of the fluid that enters into the exchanger, the longer will be the time required to it heat, and therefore the longer will be the time constant, and the slower will be the response of the system. Even in this case, we can agree with such a kind of very reasonable modelization of the system. A further refinement into the model consists in the introduction of two time delays due to the two inflow and outflow tubes that allow the measurement of the two temperatures T1 and T2 at the input and at the output of the process. Depending on the position into which the two corresponding transducers are located, we could have a delay. That means we measured the temperature T1 not sufficiently close to the process, to the exchanger. So, from when we measure T1 up to when the process is influenced, let's say, by the action of the valve that allows more vapor or less vapor to enter into it, we have a delay. And moreover, from the moment into which the process is changed, or we can say is affected by the action of the controller, up to the moment into which this effect is measured by the transducer located onto the tube crossed by the exiting fluid, that is the moment into which we measure the temperature T2, we have another delay. These delays are introduced in the final expression of T2, and we have therefore that T2 is equal to the temperature T1 multiplied. We are still in the Laplace domain, so a delay is expressed through an exponential function, multiplied by e power minus s, time the sum of the two delays from the temperature T1 measurement up to the process and from the process up to the point into which we measure T2. For what concerns instead the contribution of the vapor, that is the heat that is provided to the fluid by the vapor inside the room, only the delay from the process from the exchanger up to the measurement point of the temperature T2 is added, is considered. So we have plus WE divided FCT time exponential function of minus S time tau 2. Of course, as before, we divide all the terms by the low pass filtering function 1 plus Sm divided by F. This is a very interesting expression that not only provides a good and enough accurate model of the process, allowing us also to consider all the possible elements of disturbance onto it. But it is also a good lesson for us in terms of what the exercises will require to us. That is, we have understood how to describe a process with suitable equations that depict the thermal balance, in this case, and the behavior of the temperature as due to the temperature in input plus the contribution added by the thermal process that we are considering. And this could be a suitable approach that can be replicated when we will deal with the problems typical in the exams.